Hello, everybody. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another broadcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And guess what? I have a question for you. Is there a stairway to heaven? Every world religion claims to have access to God. And whether we're talking about a tribal third world belief system or a global religion, each has their own nuanced traditions and rituals that they believe allow us to access God. But what if religion got it wrong? What if the path to God has more to do with our ability to hear and see beyond everything? In today's episode, we will examine the parable of the sheep door and see how it reframes access to God from performance and religious ascent into a descending experience where we actually believe God has our back. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back to another episode of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host. My name's Kevin Winder. I'm an online pastor, author, and uncoach. Welcome aboard. Welcome to Sunday. So glad that you're here. I'm so glad that you're a part of this broadcast. And thank you so much, all of you who are sending in your comments, your feedback, and your perspectives. I certainly welcome it. And, you know, folks, I understand if you're new to my content and teaching, this might sound challenging. It might sound wrong. It might sound like I'm off my rocker. Yes, that's true. There is some deconstruction that I do in my talks. And folks, I just want to encourage you that I don't deconstruct for the purpose of deconstruction alone, but for the purpose of reconstruction. It's kind of like redoing your kitchen, right? You just have to take out the old cabinets and counters if you want to put new ones in. And so I offer a new perspective, something different. And many of you have caught on to that and have shared with me just how much you appreciate that. And I just want to say thank you and welcome aboard. And there are a lot of you also who, especially last week, kind of felt like, hey, this guy is not getting it right. And I just want to encourage you to say, please start a dialogue with me. Come and let's talk about this and let me hear from you. Perhaps I'm wrong. And if I am, I will absolutely change my perspective. But perhaps you might learn something too in the process, and together we'll get there. So I want to open that up and invite you to do that. You can do that by going to my website, www.kevinwinder.com. Sign up for Winder's Windshield, or just leave a comment right after the radio broadcast. I'd love to have you on board. When you do, you'll get access to the content of my podcasts, 6 years or 7 years now of blog posts, and every single radio broadcast that has gone on the air. Go to kevinwinder.com and sign up for Winder's Windshield today. Folks, we're continuing with this theme, this scenario. It seems to really resonate with so many of you. And I appreciate, again, you guys give me the feedback that you do, and that's why I'm continuing with it. We're going to look at a parable today that is, at quick glance, really easy to understand, and so often it's taught in a very specific way. And I'm going to kind of open it up slightly different, okay? And so today we're going to look at the parable of the sheep door. The parable of the sheep door. You might also know this as the Good Shepherd, okay? So sheep, as you know, are often used as a metaphor for people. Did you realize that? I mean, despite our attempts to kind of individuate ourselves from everybody else, we're very much a herd animal. And there's a metaphor where they talk about sheep and the lost sheep in Matthew 8:13, and that really focuses on the individual sheep, right, in that one. But in this case, not the one where he leaves the 99 to find the one, but in this case, the parable of the Good Shepherd, we're going to focus on the rest of the herd more than the individual. And that's an important consideration as we go through this. So while I get set up, I want you guys to kind of, I want to put some cones down so you kind of understand where I'm coming from in understanding the whole passage here in the first place. So the story occurs in chapter 10 of the book of John, and it really follows, it's a continuation of the discourse with the religious leaders, and we've been talking about that for several weeks. I've been just basically showing you how this dialogue back and forth has been going between Jesus and the religious leaders. And this comes right on the heels of him healing the blind man. And I, of course, I did a talk on that called Seeing and Not Seeing. So you can go back and check that out if you need to get caught up. And Jesus is still speaking to religious leaders. We need to understand that that's the audience here. And he's trying to help them see beyond their religious framework. And let me just say, that is also what I do all the time. Now, many of you in your maturity in your faith are very comfortable with the distinction between the Christian faith and the Christian world religion. You see them as different, as I do. And when I talk about religion, I don't talk about it favorably simply because I'm echoing the teaching of Scripture and I'm trying to follow in the footsteps of Christ, who also does not look at religion favorably. However, faith in Christ is completely different. Okay, so those differences may not always appear at the beginning, but we need to understand that when Jesus is talking here, he's talking to people to get them beyond their religious framework. Why? Well, because the religious framework is actually getting in the way of their experience with God. And for that reason, we see in John chapter 10, verse 6, that this audience fails to understand what he's talking about. And he starts off by basically saying that the religious elite are thieves and robbers. And you can read that in verses 1 through 5. And they just didn't realize that Jesus was calling them thieves and robbers. And Jesus uses the metaphor of the good shepherd and the door of the sheep, or the sheep door, to reveal something about himself. And he does it by comparing his way of action to religious ways of action. And it's really looking at the religious system's design for access to God. You see, Jesus has been claiming to be God, as we saw in John 8:58, where he says, "Behold, before Abraham was, I am." Right? And he's been proving it by his miracles, as we saw all the way back from the very beginning books of the book of John and all the way through. And we know that the religious leaders have wanted to kill him. We see that in verse 59. We see that in countless places before. And so the issue here is that religion, which is supposed to be a means of bringing people closer to God, has actually instead divided people and plundered the people. They are, ruling over the people, oppressing the people, condemning the people, ruling some in and some out, right? Which is disparaging, oppressive, hurtful, and goes against the very nature and essence of what this is all about. You see, and so this parable is all about access to God. That's the meaning of the term door, the sheep door. It's access. It's getting into something. It's accessing what's behind door number 3, right? So we need to understand that that's the gist. That's the framework. That's the context in which we begin our exploration. And sheep, as we know, are prone to follow. I've been told by people who know more about sheep than I certainly do, that if you put a group of sheep, a flock of sheep together, and you lead them into like a corner, many times the sheep will just continue pushing and pushing and pushing into the corner because they're followers. And the wolves in the back are pushing, and there's ones in the middle are pushing because they all think that the people at the front or the sheep at the front are leading them somewhere. And that's why sheep pens often don't have sharp corners. But they're prone to follow. And once a sheep recognizes the voice of the shepherd, the shepherds all have a very unique call for their flock. And if they have a specific call, the sheep know that call and they follow it. And so they just kind of herd themselves behind the voice of the shepherd. And sheep know the voice of the shepherd. And that's what Jesus is saying in verse 4. He says, "My sheep know my voice." And so when it comes to God, people can spot the imitation. I think that's what Jesus is saying in verse 4. He says, "My sheep know my voice." In other words, when they hear something that's supposed to be about God, and it's off, it doesn't quite ring right, it doesn't ring true, then they feel like they can spot the imitation. And what's happening is something is trying to be the shepherd, but the sheep just don't intuitively follow that voice. And in the framework of this writing, the time was where the religious law had become so burdensome and so tedious that religion had really just become focused on compliance. And as a result, the people were opting out. And if you're opting out, then you know that compliance just goes up. Threats go up. Fear-mongering goes up. Because the people are not opting in. And so if they're not opting in, then we do more name-calling and bashing and vilifying why they're not coming in. They just must not be good enough. They must not be good, sacred, clean, good people. They're under some other influence, right? This is the framework in which Jesus is speaking into. And my question for us today is, do you think this is happening again today when we look at modern evangelical Christianity? Is it possible that this is happening? I think it is. I mean, have we exchanged the voice of God calling us for a message of compliance? Have we exchanged it for a message of obedience? Have we exchanged it for a message of attendance? And I know that those are not easy questions. I get that. And every week I always use the example that I'm picking a scab. But the purpose is to get real healing here. And we got to get there. And in verse 8, Jesus says something again. He says, all that came before me are thieves and robbers. All that came before me are thieves and robbers. This is the second time Jesus charges the religious leadership with plundering the flock. You see, institutional religion was not serving the people, but it was requiring the people to serve institutional religion. And so let me ask you this about your church, your framework of religious attendance. Does it require you to serve it, or is it there to serve you? You see, religious compliance didn't bring people to a place of thriving. It didn't just bring them to that green pasture that's promised in these texts. Instead, it became burdens for the people that were too hard to bear, like it says in Matthew 23, verse 4, where Jesus talks about the people who preach but don't practice. They tie on burdens way too hard to bear. It's a real condemnation against the religious framework of the time. And what Jesus is doing here is he's contrasting his way, his means to God, to the religious system. And what he says, I am the sheep door, and those that go through me are saved and go in and out to pasture. What does that mean? Well, when he says those who go through me, what he's saying is that because he's contrasting what's happening, he's really just saying those who relate to God through an alternative to religion. In other words, if you kind of stay into this framework of compliance and obedience and strict rule keeping, scorecard theology, I call it, you're going to miss it, because this is an alternative. This is a different way. This new kingdom that he's bringing in that we've been talking about since way at the very beginning of this program, months and months ago. This is about how we come to become saved. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this, but the term, the sozo here, is used to be rescued. It means to be healed. It means to be delivered. And this is really specifically speaking of rescued from the plunderer, healed from the oppressiveness of the plunderer. And who are the thieves and the robbers? Who are those that are plundering them? It's the religious system. See, and the goal here is to go in and out, the freedom to go in and out. What in and out of what? In and out the door. In and out of, you go in at night for safety, you go out during the day for pasture. This is all part of it in John chapter 10, verse 9. You can read it. And so there's this whole flow that Jesus is talking about. And he says, I am the sheep door. The sheep hear my voice. They know where I am. They come in and out. And those who go in and out are saved. They're delivered from this oppressive system. Now, it's important, like I said earlier, not to insert into this passage the modern evangelical notion of salvation, which actually sees Christianity as an alternative religion. You see, for Jesus, at least in this text, healing was from the religious oppression, and freedom was to go in and out between safety and pasture, like I said in verse 9. You see, he's offering liberation. This really wasn't a statement about one's eternity. This was not a text that's talking about you have to become a Christian. What he's talking about is you have to trust the way of Christ. That's different than trusting in your religious framework to see you through. Right? Now, it's not a statement about one's eternity, but let's be honest here. That can actually be implied through these texts. There's no question about it. So I'm not going to, you know, diminish anybody if that's the way they want to spin this. But that's not really what the heart of the passage is talking about. And so when you look at verse 1, you look at verses 8, you know, by now we know who Jesus is referring to as the thief, right? Now he's done it twice. He's mentioned it two times. Verse 1, verse 8. And it's our organized religion. And basically, he's contrasting the freedom to go in and out of pasture. And again, he says the thief, organized religion only steals and kills and destroys our life. Verse 10. So this is not like a subtle jab, an innuendo. This is a hard, in-your-face statement. And like most of Jesus' statements, they're extremely subversive. And it's deconstruction. He is absolutely deconstructing the framework here. And so as an interpreter here, it's my goal also to deconstruct our frameworks. And I know that gets uncomfortable. But try and walk with me a little bit and see if something new doesn't emerge within your experience of faith. But you see, when he's calling the religious elite and organized religion the thieves, he's talking about how they kill and destroy our life. It begs the question about how much of our lives are actually stolen by such thieves. It doesn't have to be just religion. We can now open this up and say, look, is your life stolen by career? Do you just give it all to work? You could say the same about religion, right? If you just throw it all within the framework and everything else just goes to pot, you have, you know, your life, your very life has been stolen by religion. Addictions can do it. Unprofitable relationships can steal your life. So this is a wider spectrum here about who are the real thieves. But specifically in this text, he's talking about the religious leaders because that's who his audience is. And Jesus' purpose was really the opposite. He's really to just show a contrast and say, look, I'm not just going to show you how to live our life. I'm actually going to show you how to live it to the fullest, right? That's verse 10. And that's why he came. That's his purpose, was to help us to live life abundantly. And this has everything to do with learning how to be in systems and not of systems, right? We're called to be in the world, but not of the world. And so our religions don't have to be negative, and they don't have to be abandoned and forsaken, but they can't be the thing that defines us. You see, thieves take, the shepherd gives. And of course, you can't really subvert religion without paying a price. You can't offer a disruptive program or offering to the world without the status quo or the establishment rising against you. I mean, this is why Jesus says the shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He contrasts that yet again with the hired hand in verse 12. Now, if we're talking about the sheep being the religious institution, then here the hired hand is the paid clergy. And I've mentioned before how I feel about this. It's no surprise, as an online pastor, I'm not for full-time ministry. And I know that that's a framework that works for many of you, and you can defend it all you want. I'm not arguing it. I just feel like scripture's pretty clear. Paul says, hey man, there's no way I'm going to get paid or accused of being paid for teaching the gospel, so I'm going to make tents. And I know you can say, don't muzzle the ox while you're treading out the grain, and there's all kinds of things that you can say to support the cause. But in the end, if you are teaching or talking about the gospel and you're paid to do it, it changes something. And this is what I think Jesus is talking about with the hired hand. He says, those who profited, these are the people who profited from running the temple. You know, the hired hands, they made their money by selling sacrifices. They, you know, they benefited by the sacrifices of everybody else. And, you know, they're supposed to do the work of the shepherd, but instead they looked out for their own interests. And this is how the religious institutions became so corrupt. And so when the wolf, which, you know, a lot of people see this as an image of the devil or Satan, the destroyer coming. But whatever it is, the wolf is any kind of negative impact into the life of the flock, right? So when the wolf comes, the hired hand just dodges all the bullets, right? They have to protect their position. They have to protect themselves. And I can certainly speak in my own life of times where in ministry, I held to one position and the others held to the other. And of course, the senior pastor has to defend their position. And the result is that I'm relegated to the sidelines, right? And that's the reality of how this thing often works. But you see, the good shepherd is different than the hired hand. The hired hand has to defend their turf. They've got a lot of ego and investment in everything, and their whole life and well-being is wrapped up in their proclamation story and their framework and their belief system and everything else. But the good shepherd stands between the wolf and the flock. In verse 11, it says he lays down his life for the sheep. He lays it down. And what does that mean? You know, well, it means the good shepherd has your back. It means, yeah, you might take a few shots, but there's someone who's going to dive in front of those bullets for you. And for Jesus, he already knew his audience wanted to kill him, right? The people that he's talking to have tried already to get him, and he's dodged their grasp a few times. And, you know, laying down his life meant that there just would come a time when he would not escape. Not because he couldn't escape because they finally got him. No, but because he would no longer even try, right? Nobody takes his life from him, he says, but I lay it down of my own authority. You see, there's going to come a time where he looks at the moment and he says, I'm just going to submit to the will of institutional evil here, but only for the purposes of subverting it. And I'm going to do it once for everybody. You see, religion tries to get everyone to God, but the shepherd's death means that God has come to everyone in a very unexpected way. And so with the question is there a stairway to heaven? It really reframes everything to say, do we even need one? Because heaven has come to us. You see, God comes, the door opens in a very diverse way. The sheep door is the way. And it comes in a very diverse way. See, religion likes to say, you got to do it this way. And Jesus is saying it comes in a lot of ways. And so when he says, I have sheep that are not of this fold, I have to bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. And there will be one flock and one shepherd. And so he is creating a distinction between flocks. But ultimately, it's one flock, right? He's saying the distinction is not those who are saved and those who believe and those who don't believe or saved and unsaved. It's those who are saved and those who will be saved. He's saying, I have to go and get the sheep that are not a part of this flock. And they're going to listen to my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. It's all there, right, in verse 16. And what he's doing is he's expanding our consideration of what the flock actually is. You see, every world religion tries to control and ratify access to God and create uniformity through compliance. But Jesus seems to indicate that we may be surprised by who is a part of the flock. His flock has unity as well as diversity. And so that brings us to our question, you know, what is the path to God? And Jesus connects all the dots by charting the course. I mean, he's the door, right? He's the sheep door, the archetype of what this is going to look like for you. you see the other passage where he's the gate and he's Thlebo, it's constricted. You can't just take everything and rise up and go through it. You got to shed. You see, first it's a downward path. He says, I lay down my life. And then it's an upward turn. I have authority to take it up again, verse 18. And this is all given to him by God the Father. And this is clearly a foreshadow of Jesus' death and resurrection, but in a cosmic sense, it's the outline for the Christiform pattern, which is life and death and burial, followed by renewal and new life, right? This is, happens to everything, whether you're talking about a star or a smoothie. Everything goes through this pattern of life, death, burial, new life, right? This is spring and summer. This is everything you ever met and touched and seen goes through that. The path to God is not the ascent that's offered by religion. You know, you go higher up, you climb the ranks, you get more disciplined, you obey more, you get more strict, you wind it tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter until finally you have no friends and nobody understands you and you're just so alienated and you're just doing it as a big martyr for God. Folks, that is not the path to God. You see, what happens is the path is the descent. It's the death of ourself. It's the letting go of our ego. It's the forfeiting of our pride. This is the thing, the death that leads to the renewal, the new life, the abundant life. And that ultimately leads to the green pasture of new humanity that is marked by humility and unity and peace. This is the Christian story. So my question then is, how much of your life has been stolen by thieves? I mean, does the idea that religion is stealing your life actually offend you? If it is, please think about this. Take a little bit of deconstruction today and ponder this. Have we traded an experience with God for religious practice? If so, that's a bad trade. So let's try following the voice of the shepherd. Let's follow through the sheep door rather than through religious practice. Let's have faith that God is our ultimate caretaker. And just trust that voice. Trust that God has your back and see what happens. See, the pattern is set. The price has been paid. And here's how you're going to know if you're free. You'll know you're free when we can surrender the very outcomes of our life.